Good evening. This is K2BAR, the Bergen Amateur Radio Association call sign. This is the technical net. The technical net is run weekly on Thursday nights for the purposes of advancing the radio art, for exploring our wonderfully complex technical hobby. All aspects of our hobby are considered technical, and you're welcome to participate. At this time, is there any emergency or priority traffic for the use of the repeater before we proceed? This is K2BAR. Okay, nothing heard. Good evening, everyone, again. This is Gordon, W2TangoTangoTango, and this is a K2BAR. And the technical net is a very simple, straightforward exercise. You get to ask any question about any topic within amateur radio. The net is open to any licensed amateur with a technician privilege or higher, or if you will, privileges for the 2-meter band, however you get there. And we look forward to your questions. The format of the net is exceedingly simple. And I got to find that HD that's running around here that's making noise. That is very annoying. Anyway, we'll take care of that. Anyway, the net is run weekly on Thursday nights on 14679, the Paramus repeater owned by the Bergen County FM Association, which we encourage you to sponsor and subsidize and join as well. The format for the net is pretty straightforward. You come in with your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question, a comment, or none of the above. So in a moment we'll get down to that. In the meantime, let me just make a couple of quick announcements. One of them is that we have nets 4 nights of the week. All of them are at 9 o'clock, and all of them are run by the Bergen Amateur Radio Association. On Mondays, we have a 10-meter net on 28350 upper sideband. 10-meter net. It's run by K2ZO. It's a wonderful net. On Tuesday, we have a 440 net, I believe on 443-100, not 444-100, excuse me. I'm usually busy Tuesday nights. That's in Franklin Lakes, also owned by the Bergen County FM Association. That net is run by N2OEL, Noel, and he's always there. On Wednesday night, back here on this repeater, we have the 2-meter chat net, if you will, and basically it's a roundtable kind of net run by KF2IB, Ben, and again, back on this repeater. And of course, we get to Thursday, it's where we are now with the tech net. In any case, Bergen Amateur Association has a bunch of fun activities, including a kit night on Tuesday nights, usually at Westwood High School in Washington Township, and that's a lot of fun as well. And our monthly meetings are usually the first Sunday of the month in Ridgewood at the Red Cross Building. We gather at 7 o'clock and the meeting opens at 7:45. Anybody's welcome to come and join us. Okay, having gotten the preliminaries done, let's remind you that anybody can check in and that we look forward to your check-ins. Even if you don't have a question or a comment, we look forward to your checking in because you end up often becoming an unwitting resource for helping solve world hunger, or at least whatever quandary is out there perplexing somebody else. So we thank you for sharing your God-given gifts in advance and look forward to your checking in. At this time, if we could have check-ins with Kilo stations with their call sign, their name, and whether or not they have a question or a comment or none of the above, please call K2BAR.
Hello, this is Zillow Oscar, Jim. No comments at this time.
Good evening, Jim. Very good. K2ZO. Welcome aboard. Anybody else with a Kilo station, please call K2BAR.
K2AMI, Tony. No comments.
I got 2 stations, only copied 1. Got you, Tony. K2AMI, you're good to go. With no comment. Who was the other station?
KC2KXV, Vinny, with a comment.
I was thinking about you today. Good evening, Vinny. You have a question, or a comment, I said comments. I made a note. Do you have a comment? comment. Alrighty, who is anybody else with the Kilo station or Kilo call? The please check. Try that again. Rented lips tonight, gentlemen. Any of you station with a Kilo at the beginning of their call, please try calling in to K2BA.
K2CSL, David. No question.
Good evening, David. Thank you for that information on FiOS from last week. That proved to be useful, and I have an update on that as well. Got that you have no questions or comments at this time. Any other stations with Kilo at the beginning of their call, please call K2BAR. Okay, we have about November stations. November stations at this time with call sign, name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment.
November, Juliet, 1 Whiskey, Dave, no questions.
Hi, Dave. NJ1W, Mr. QRP and Build It Stuff. Welcome aboard. Any other November stations, please call K2BAR. Okie doke. Just changed microphones just for grins, just I don't like it. I'm looking for audio comparisons, by the way, gentlemen. Any other November stations, please call K2BAR. Okay, any Alpha stations, please call K2BAR.
John, none of the above.
Hi, John. I'm glad to see that you've introduced a new category called None of the Above. That's great. You neither have a question, a comment, or... Never mind. All right. Anyway, any other Alpha stations, please call K2BAR. Okay. At this point, Whiskey stations, please call K2BAR.
Whiskey India, 2 Whiskey, Steve, no questions.
I have a question.
Okay, I got 2 stations out of that one. there are probably two check-ins out of that one. Steve, good evening, WI2W, with nothing to add at this time. And W4DSA Daniel, I think you said you had a question, is that correct?
Yep, that's correct, I have a question tonight.
Uh-oh, look out. Daniel's got a question. All right, very good. Any other stations with a whiskey call, please call K2BAR.
WE2R, Charlie, no question.
Okay, Charlie, good evening to you. Good hearing you again, as always. Got you in. Any other stations with whiskey, please call K2BAR.
W2JEK, Don, no questions.
Okay, Don, no problem. Got you squared away. W2JEK, good to go. Anybody else with a whiskey call, please call K2BAR.
W2VVV, Tim, and I have a comment and a related question. And as an aside there, Gordon, your audio quality sounds the same between the two mics, but your volume is notably lower on this new mic. Back to you.
Yeah, I noticed that myself. That's something I always have to compensate for. And you got to yell at Bob Heil about that. But all right, very fine. thank you for that. And I think you had another question or comment, so I'll just make a note of that as well. Any other whiskey stations, please call K2BAR. Okay, stations checking into the net are K2ZO, K2AMI, KC2KXV, K2DSL, NJ1W, AB2XD, Whiskey into 2 Whiskey, Whiskey 4 DFA, Whiskey Echo 2 Romeo, W2JK, W2 Victor Victor Victor, Whiskey 2 Tango Tango Tango. Last call before we get to the business at hand. This is K2BAR.
Hi, D. Ben. No questions. Just listening in.
Okay, Ben, good evening. KF2ID, W2IB, India Bravo, sorry. W2TTT. All right, very good. Any other stations before we get to business at hand? Okie doke. All right, so let's do it this. I'm sensing Vinny's is going to be a little more complicated, but what the heck, we'll go with Vinny first and then to Tim. KC2KXV, how's everything in video land, video, digital video land, as it were, and miscellaneous other things? This is K2BAR.
Gordon, it's a good segue. My comment, and things in video land are good. It's growing by leaps and bounds. Video on the Internet's really becoming a currency the way ASCII has been for so many years. My comment is I have stumbled upon, and I hope some of you have as well, amateurlogic.com, which has a tremendous number of video that is done by amateurs for amateurs. They're 20 to 45 minutes, and they have everything from building a software-defined radio to building, you know, a high-gain Wi-Fi antenna to cold weather tips for your antenna. Anyway, I'm impressed, and I just wanted to bring that to anyone's attention. And I'm wondering, Gordon, whether you have run across them in the past. Over.
Negative. And could you give us the website again, please?
It is www.amateurlogic.com. And you'll get the first page, and you'll find a place for downloads. And if you type in www.amateurlogic.com/downloads.htm, you'll find the download page, and you can download it as Windows Media directly to your hard drive. It'll direct you to a YouTube site or Google. And boy, it's a very flexible way, and it's actually probably one of the best combinations of being informative. And the two hams that do it seem to be pretty nice guys. Over.
Okay, let me make sure I have the rest of that URL. www.amateurlogic.com/download.what?
Just on HTM.
Roger. Okay, made a note of that. And as a wonderful online resource with all sorts of cool downloads, you said yes?
Roger. Yes, and as a category of what can happen when you point a video camera, as we were talking potentially on this net of being instructive and having live video, they go in very tight, and they will show you how to modify boards, how to make certain projects work. It's just really neat. It's almost, you know, a new world version of Keithkit doing it in real time with video. It's really fascinating and good stuff.
In that call. Very good, Steve. Any comments, Steve?
I don't know. I just got here, but there's an interview with Martin Jew. There's of MFJ fame. There's a 44-minute on building the Soft Rock software-defined radio. There's Field Day pictures or video. There's a Dayton Hamvention video, 50 minutes long, with fancy new expensive radios. There's 55 minutes on the basic stamp microcontroller. It really looks outstanding. I can't wait to dive in, and I'm going to get even with you for this big time sink. Thank you, WITW.
Yeah, well, yeah, it comes from his Jesuit education.
They ruined me at 14. I may step out for a second, Gordon, and be back. The XYL needs to get something taken out of the car. KC2KXV.
Yeah, when you get a chance, I need you to call me on your cell phone and just leave your number into its caller ID. I had a fatal phone crash.
Roger, roger. I'll be back probably in 10. KC2KXV.
No problem. All right. Anyway, very good. Wow, what a neat resource this is. Episode 16 is available now, is now available for download. Woohoo! To interview with Martin F. Chu. Good guy, actually. Real good guy. Anyway, this is super. Episode brilliant. Oh, guys, making me drool already. Oh, my. All right. Well, you know, maybe one day we'll think about this and do something really funky. But anyway, that's great. All right. On that note, Steve, why don't you peruse that a bit and see if there's something that we can use in near real time. And I'm wondering if we we should issue it, maybe even show that at a Barra meeting one time, and maybe we'll take one of the items off of there, run part or all of the video at a Barra meeting, and then do some real-time presentation. We actually have to have a longer program segment, but that's okay. We could do that one night as opposed to, quote, club business. Anyway, might be interesting. In any case, I believe we had Daniel, and I skipped over you, Daniel. I apologize. You said you didn't have a question. You did or you did not? I'm sorry, Daniel. W4DSA, K2BAR.
Good evening.
Yes, I actually do have a question, W4DSA. And no problem, please skip over it. Actually, I just wanted to put out a question. If anybody has any information on amateur implementations of radar. That's something that I haven't seen talked about in a long time, and actually since really back in the old days when a lot of military gear was still available, you know, post-World War II type stuff, but in more recent generations, I really haven't seen anything related to it. I see a lot of weather chasers down in the southern states, and they tend to use marine radar, but those are definitely not licensed for normal use. I'm wondering if anybody has any resources on that.
That's an interesting question. Anybody have anything on amateur radar? I know radio astronomy is pretty popular in the amateur bands, but how about radar astronomy where you transmit? Well, we're going to have to keep pumping that question up a little bit because that's a really good question. Maybe a quick Google search is in order here. We could do that, I think. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll file that one away unless someone else has something immediate, in which case we'll take that, and if not, we'll go to the next topic while we're fishing for answers for this one. Okay. Well, amazingly enough, there are sites. Digital Amateur Rocket Tracking System, Radar Tutorials from Apollo Wireless, and then, of course, KA9MVA's Digital Amateur Rocket Tracking System Notes, Radar Components. So, yes, there is a, I think if you just do amateur radar on your Google search, it should come up first. The KA9MVA DARTS Tech Notes Radar Components site. Building your own amateur radar. There is an answer to that question.
Yeah, that's better than nothing. Just was wondering if anybody else had any personal involvement in anything like that. But I guess not. But in any case, if anybody hears anything, you know where to send it.
Okay, well, let's keep in mind that this is built, this was designed to track amateur rockets. So it's transmitting. Looks like it's a 10 gig. It's the real deal. And there's some very funny lines here already. One of them is, don't worry about the 1 dB loss. You can make it up with another mimic. That's a funny line. For a weak signal person, that's a very funny line. Alrighty. Well, let's go to the next topic. Tim, I think you had a question or no, you had a comment. W2 Victor from K2BAR.
Very good. Well, I had a comment and an associated question. Before I get to that, I just noticed I checked out that Amateur Logic website. Pretty neat little website. And they also have iPod videos and an RSS feed, which I just subscribed to. So now I'll get them all the videos delivered to my iPod automatically when the new ones come out. So my comment, and then thereafter a follow-up question to that, is I was in Borough Hall here in Dumont last night, and I was looking at some of the public information, the Open Public Records Act disclosures that were hung up on the bulletin board, and one of them was a proposed municipal ordinance regarding where cellular towers could be put up. And under what circumstances, how tall they could be, you know, how much money the town could get from it, et cetera, et cetera. As I was reading through it, one section in the proposed ordinance said amateur radio defined, and it said no section of this ordinance shall any restrictions be placed on any tower being used for amateur radio purposes as long as the tower is under 75 feet tall. And 75 feet tall just seems very, very tall for me. Let me drop it a second.
It's fine.
And, I wouldn't mind a 75-foot tall tower, but in an area around here where people are so up in arms about cell towers to begin with, I can't even imagine putting up a 75-foot tower and any of the neighbors being okay with it. I mean, I guess legally they would have to be. So that was my statement. My question is, if anybody else that's on the net is familiar with any local ordinances in their town limiting heights of towers. I know I had a brief discussion with this with Charlie. Just curious if anybody knew and what the height restriction was. Because I know in Bergenfield there are a few gentlemen I've seen with towers, and very few of them go just over the peak of the house. Back in that, this is W2VBB.
Well, since you picked on my town, I'll go there first. I'm extremely familiar with the ordinances and the practice as well. With respect to cell towers, which is what you brought up, let me make sure I have it. Okay, very good. With respect to cell towers, our town, probably close to a decade ago, passed an ordinance that required that all cell towers be on municipal property, which I have some issue with, but it, you know, I'm not in the cell business. I don't understand why a private citizen with commercial property and appropriate safety margins, etc., could not put up a cell tower, other than the fact that we have a borough ordinance that says you can't. You can't even put a cellular antenna on the side of your building without it. In fact, there was a thought to have a cell tower across the street from the middle school, which would not have been a radiation hazard in any way, but people were up in arms, and the owner of the building, was not able to proceed with his project. Another ordinance probably close to 20 years ago, addressed the question of TVRO dishes back when they were big C-band types, and they limited commercial enterprises to two of those antennas, which I thought was rather interesting because we used to have a bar on Washington Avenue on the west side called A's. I noticed at that time they had two dishes. Some other bar had two dishes. And the cable TV tower had two large C-band dishes and numerous small ones scattered around the property over by the borough line with Dumont and New Milford. So, I raised the question 20-some-odd years ago, I guess that's when this ordinance was being discussed, that if you are home, the ordinance was originally written with the notion of with the commercial purposes in mind. So I was arguing, okay, but if you're home in a residential area and you work from your home and you happen to take a satellite feed in the conduct of your business, does that now restrict you to two dishes because you're using one or more for the reception of business content? And much to my amazement, a neighbor of mine who was then a councilman and a really good guy, I didn't realize it, but he worked from home, did not have a satellite dish, obviously, but he abstained from the voting on the grounds that he worked from home and didn't want to be embroiled in that mess should it ever come to pass. He's a really principled guy. His name is Jack Hoffman, and a really good guy, by the way, in case you're wondering. Amateur towers in Bergenfield, basically, I'm sure there are all sorts of rules and regulations regarding them, but I think if you keep them neat, orderly, properly maintained, and preferably part of your main structures and don't add a structure, generally speaking, I think the town leaves you alone. That's pretty much my observation. After about 20 years of having a tower on the property. That's pretty much my take on it. Having the closest neighbor help you dig the hole for it and help you put it up doesn't hurt either. In any case, that's my story. So I hope that's illustrative. Does anybody else have any stories? Maybe, Tony, you'd like to tell your story. I'm thinking that. K2AMI, can you tell your story in your former residence and how that changed case law in your community?
Well, going back to ancient history again here, it was like 1989. But we had a problem with putting a tower in my backyard. It being, at that time, my property was very adequate enough to support a tower, so that if it fell, it would have fallen on my own property. It would not have extended beyond the property lines, which I thought was important. But more important, the neighbors directly behind me objected to the fact that there would be a tower that they'd have to see when they went into their backyard and looked over the fence. So anyway, this situation kind of bloomed into a planning board decision to veto the tower because it was going to be an eyesore. And it went further to the county court, which said they couldn't handle such a problem. And it went to the state court, and they said, no, that led to a decision. So it ended up in the Third Circuit Court in Philadelphia. And there was a federal court there. The judge was a federal judge. And he read, at that time, PRB1, which had only been less than a year old. And in understanding PRB1, he said, we put up a tower. Because River Edge kind of objected. And the compromise was that River Edge would allow me to put up the tower. And again, I was dealing with a 50-foot tower at that point. And let me drop it for a second.
W2AKR, repeater.
So River Edge was happy to let me put up the tower after the federal judge recommended that each one of the individual opposing members of the planning board, including the mayor and the council and the building inspector, and again, all the members of the planning board, each one of them would have to submit separate briefs to the federal judge indicating why they thought that this would be an eyesore or unnecessary item to have. And when the town found out that they were not covered by municipal lawyers, municipal lawyers were only available for the mayor and the council, not for the planning board members, and it got to be an enormous financial burden on everybody. Well, they gave me $10,000 and told me to go put up my tower and forget about it, and I did that. Whereupon I paid my lawyer, a fellow named Bob Cherry from Orange, Bloomfield area, and I walked away happy, and the tower remained there for 5 or 6 years until I it changed my lifestyle. But let me drop it one more time.
Change your lifestyle? That's a subtle comment.
Okay. Anyway, Steve Mendelson and I sat down with the borough attorney about 5 years ago. And he said, well, we don't have an ordinance in town. Let's write an ordinance. And Steve and I inputted an ordinance to the borough attorney, and he reviewed it and accepted it eventually with some details. And the basic part of the ordinance says that a tower can be as high as necessary to clear neighborhood foliage and any physical obstructions that might be created by large buildings in the area. It would have to have line of sight vision over the top of any neighborhood foliage. No limitations in feet. If I had a 100-foot tree in my backyard, I could put up a 110-foot tower. I never did get to that point, but the present ordinance is subject to the surrounding property restrictions, limitations around my house. Back to Ned.
Wow, that's interesting. And that's in River Edge, right?
Yeah. For quite a while, we did have the River Edge ordinance on the Barrow website, Oh, we've eliminated it in the last couple of years, but yes, that's in River Edge.
That sounds splendid. I'd like to see it in Oradell, but never mind. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. All right, anybody else have comments about ordinances they'd like to make? This is K2BAR.
KS2ID. I sort of remember that the FCC limitation was 200 feet, unless it interferes with airplanes or something like that. It interferes with aviation. But I believe that's the federal regulation. Somebody may comment on that.
W2TTT with a clarification on that. Okay, the clarification is that your tower can be up to 200 feet without having to register it with the FCC and without having to notify the FAA and put appropriate markings, including they call beacons, otherwise known as lights, on your tower. There's a whole process for doing that, but there's no constraint on tower height in amateur radio. The exception is within so many feet of an airport runway, and at that point, it's so many feet high of height for so many feet of distance. I forget what the regulation is. Once you get to the 200-foot mark, if you're under the 200-foot mark or under that requirement, you're good to go. If you are in violation of that, or she was exceeding that, I should say exceeding that, it, again, the process is one of registration, not prohibition. So you're good to go, Ben. You can put up a 500-foot tower as long as you can get it cleared by the locals. My fundamental problem with a lot of these ordinances is that they make the assumption that towers fall from their base, and towers virtually never fall from their base. On that basis, houses should not be allowed to be within the distance, such that if they tilted over and collapsed in a wind, let's say they just went flat, one wall facing your neighbor, the requirement should be that the setback on your property plus the setback of your neighbor's property, to the property line, should be sufficient so your house could fall down. So that's an absurd and, if you will, specious argument designed to minimize the height of the tower and not designed to provide additional safety margins. Alrighty. Any other comments on tower ordinances from anybody? This is K2BAR. Okie doke. Well, I'm wondering if anyone... I'll go back to Steve. Steve? Actually, first, let me go... Before we go back to Steve, to ask him how he's doing on his little data mining exercise on Vinny's AmateurLogic.com website. I'm wondering, Tim, do you have anything more on this that you'd like to add? W2BVV, K2BAR.
No, that's a negative. I was just curious if anybody was familiar with borough ordinances, because I know they, I know about the 200-foot limitation prior to having to report into all sorts of zoning and planning and stuff like that, safety planning. But yeah, I was just kind of floored when I read that that they were proposing, I think it must be a standard ordinance that they put, like Verizon and them, put together and throw in an amateur radio section. And I was wondering if they, threw in that 75-foot height as a diversion from their tower. It's like, hey, look at this ham. He's got a huge tower. I could picture around here, I could see putting up like even a 200-foot tower out in the country or in the Midwest or something like that, where there's very little surrounding neighbors so close by. But these parts in the suburbs, everybody shares backyards and front lawns and stuff like that. I'd expect to see something more like, no more than 10 or 15, 20 feet above the tallest height of the structure, similar to what Tony was talking about. But, I thought 75 was pretty high. But, that was very interesting, and I was not familiar of, I remember Tony had mentioned him having some troubles with his tower, but I didn't know if a federal case became out of it. But that's kind of funny. But very good. Back to that, K2BAR, W2BBB.
The bottom line answer is, when someone gives you a hard time, they have to understand you're going to ask them a question. Do you really want to make a federal case out of this? Because River Edge lost big time, and that usually causes some towns to worry. The only town I've ever seen tell a ham to go scratch in the face of PRB 1, and I think Tony's, in fact I know Tony's case was settled by then, was probably, what do you call it, Saddlebrook. I just won't go into why. But some innocent ham put something about 5 feet off his roof and got hammered because they had a 35-foot ordinance rule and he had like 33 feet of house. My tower is 45 feet with a mast sticking up because, again, same kind of thing you're talking about where trees and structures in the near field are way too high. So I've tried to minimize it by putting my more complex antennas in the backyard, but that still has limitations. Anyway, enough of that. Any other comments on towers or tower ordinances and things like that? K2BAR.
K2AMI with a comment.
Tony, go ahead.
I've never searched for it, but I understand that the settlement with my ordinance is on the web, and it would be something to the effect of Izzle versus the town of River Edge on a tower ordinance. If anybody could find it, I would appreciate being forwarded to the URL of wherever it may be. I know that the ARRL was very familiar with it when I had called on an occasion to speak to somebody in the legal department. I mentioned my name. I said, "Oh, I know you." So I was well known up there. But it's possible that it's on the website, on some website someplace. If anybody finds it, I'd like to know.
I have it. It's a PDF file on the AWRL website, and the easiest way to find it is to Google ICCO space VS reverses space river space edge. It comes up first, but it's on the AWRL website. You can also go to the AWRL website and pull it down. Just by doing the same thing.
Thank you very much.
United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. One of my favorite circuits, by the way. As opposed to the Ninth Circus, which is another question. Anyway, enough of my politics. All right, moving right along. Thank you, Tony, for that. It's right here. And it was filed April 7th, 1988. It was argued on January 20th, 1988, by Robert B. Cherry, Esquire. I remember when his office was on Union Boulevard. Anyway, he's a nice man. He helped me with my tower, too, by the way, when I had an inquiry on the matter. And that works out very well. And Chigaris and Safra was the opposing attorney. Interesting. Interesting. All right. All right. Well, enough of that. Any other comments on tower ordinances?
This is K2BAR. Another comment about a different subject. This is K2AMI.
Go ahead, Tony.
This weekend, Saturday and Sunday, is the sweepstakes for sideband. And I don't know the exact format of the reply. I guess it's on ARRL's website, but I haven't taken the time. I've been lazy enough to not look it up. It might be a good idea to spread that around so people know how to respond on a return call if you make a contact. I understand it involves your first year of your license and zone and maybe a 5-line report, but I don't. Something called the checksum is designed into it.
Yep. If you go to the AWRL website and go to the sweepstake and just, you know, query sweepstakes, and it'll then pull up an opportunity to yank the rules down. You can pull all that down and get all that information for the sweepstakes. It's very cool. And you're right, I think it's the year of license and then a sequence number.
J-E-K.
Section, I think.
J-E-K.
Good, Don.
Yeah, I was in the CW version of this thing a week before last. You will send a number one, if that's your first contact, and then you will send the precedence, which is a letter A, B, or Q, which is low power, high power, or QRP. Then you send your call. Then you send the year that you were licensed, let's say 51, and then your Northern New Jersey, which is your ARRL section. Your objective is to work as many stations and work all the, of course, and then try to, the sections that you work are the multipliers, so you try to get as many as you can. I think there's about 80 all told, counting the Canadian provinces. And if you make all of them, it's called a queen sweep. You'd have to do a lot of heavy-duty work to get that, I think, especially with the band conditions now, but that's the sequence that you use. You're the number of your contact, and of course, contact one, and the next time is contact two, and so on. Then we get the same information from the other fellow. Back to you.
Good evening.
Alrighty. Anybody else on sweepstakes for this weekend, please call K2B Air. Yeah, KF2ID. How do you find out the year you were first licensed? I had a prior call, and I don't know what year the year was exactly. I got a rough idea. But is there some place you can look it up? Some people say look up old hand manuals. I don't have hand manuals that go back that far, nor do I know where to get them. Is there some simple place where you just tap in your call letters and up comes the year in which you were first licensed?
W2VVV.
Go ahead, Tim.
Go to vanityhq.com. There is no FCC database that you can really search for old call signs, but this vanityhq.com keeps track of your old call signs. And for instance, you know, I go there, I search for W2VVV, I see my old call sign was KB2YGJ. I can click on that. Website's a little slow sometimes. Probably a bunch of people looking at it right now. And then it'll go back as far as it can find history on your call sign. And for me, it can go as far back as it looks like August 29th of 96 for my Tech Plus license. And I was licensed shortly before that, about I think a year or two before that with my novice.
What if you don't have a vanity call?
So vanityhq.com.
I found my vanity call sign. If you're ever looking for a vanity call sign, use this website. And another neat thing about this website is if you look on the side there, there's a link that says N4MC's Ham Locator. You click on there, and you can enter in a call sign or a zip code. And what it'll do is it'll search and give you a Google map with pushpins with all the hams located around you or wherever you search. So you can find all the hams in your neighborhood, and you can see, click on each one and see who's, what their license class is and stuff like that. It's a pretty neat website.
KF2ID, does it have to be a vanity call sign? Mine wasn't a vanity call sign, it was just the call sign that FCC donated to me.
No, it's irrelevant. It doesn't have, it just happens to be a website for looking up vanity call signs, but this N4MC, this ham, made this website, and he also, you'll see him reference this Operation CQ. And that's an attempt to create kind of an ancestry of all the call signs that have been issued.
Is it vanityhq.com?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. I'm making a note of that for the notes as well. I have a question that was just phoned in by KC2NZC when people are done with this topic. Any more on VanityHQ? Okay, well, that sounds like a very useful site there, Tim. Thank you for pointing that out. And Ben, does that answer your question? Yeah, I'm just going to try it out. I'll let you know shortly.
91, Ben.
How did you figure that out, Charlie? Good evening, I'm adding you to the list.
I typed in his call sign, KF2ID, and it shows his previous call sign before that was KA2UUS, and he was and it has a last known date of 91 when he was a technician.
Okay, well, thank you. Let me see. Makes me, oh, that doesn't seem right, quite right. Problem with that is I had somebody look it up once, a couple of years, two or three years ago, and at that time he said I was 24 years. They looked it up in old handbooks. I was 23 or 24 years. I don't remember what year that was. And my reason was wondering if I could join the Secretary Club, and, 91 is not that long ago, so no, I think it's way that KA2UUS was sometime before that, so it seems to be not go back far enough. All right, well, thanks anyways. It's KF2ID.
April 17th, 1984.
Now that sounds good. Where'd you get that from, the same site?
Charlie looked at the commercial database archive, and that's the last one that shows was for 91. But there's a historical interpretation, too. I can't recall exactly how he does it. I think this guy takes it out of old call books. But it looks like the earliest date of issue for your call sign is April 17th, 1984. And, yeah, Charlie's confirming it comes out of old call books. So, there you go. It's a pretty neat website, and the guy just does this for... you know, for his own, just for his own edification.
Okay, thanks very much. That was a quick answer to the question. All right, very good, and I thank the guy, too. that answered the problem. Now if I want to join the Century Club, Quarter Century Club, I guess I can. All right, thank you very much. Oh, no, I can't. Am I in 25 for that? No, that's 2009. No, I still got another couple of years to go. Oh, well. Alright, thanks again. It's KF2ID.
I'm appalled. I've been able to join the QCWA for the best part of a decade, and you can't join yet?
Well, I was told at the time that I inquired how to be a ham for 25 years. Now, if you add 25 to 1984, you get 2009, and this is 2007.
Yeah, I know. I was licensed in 75 and spent 2 years before that, probably 3 years before that, struggling to get my ticket. From my freshman year on, I got it my senior year. I actually got in the summer between my junior and senior year of high school, 75. But I waited a long time to get that to get that ticket, even once I passed the test, because the process was barbaric in the way you use the mail to move applications and tests back and forth, along with millions of CB applications into the same post office box in Gettysburg. Anyway, those were the days. Thank God for electronic submissions now. Alrighty. Next question let's see. Oh, yes. Phone call from KC2NZC, my son John. He wanted to know there was a great aftermarket program that you can run on your computer that tells you all about your computer, including software that's loaded and its registry keys and all that good, not registry keys, but you know, it's keys so you could reload it if you had to and things like that. Does anybody remember the name of that program? It's a program that's not built by Microsoft, it's somebody else's, but it tells you a lot about your machine and its system info and all the applications and hardware and such like that. Anybody want to take a stab at it? This is K2BAR.
Comment?
Charlie?
Everest Home Edition.
There were two. Real quick, what was that, Tim?
I think the one he's referring to is Everest Home Edition. At least that's the one I use. It's freeware. Just Google Everest, E-V-E-R-E-S-T, Home Edition. And it'll give you all sorts of information about the hardware installed in your computer, software, and the like. Even gives me the brand names of the two DIMMs that I have installed for memory.
Okay. I'll make note of that. And Charlie?
Yeah, I think it's called Bellarc, V-A, or B-E-L-A-R-C, Advisor. I mean, I'm just typing it in right now. But the bad part about it is if your computer's connected to the internet and you're running a web server on your computer, it's a well-known Google hack that you can strip people's XP keys from the internet. So if you need an XP key, you just search for it on the internet and it comes up. Bellarc Advisor will print out a sheet, and then I would probably uninstall it.
Okay, very good. I'll let him know both of those. Thank you very much, gentlemen. That's really cool. And it was Bellarc Advisor is the one I was thinking of, but I've now learned about a second one, which is even better. You can tell me, dim manufacturers and models. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought they were the same two programs, but apparently not. I'm just looking at the website now. I've also used Bellarc Advisor as well. Maybe I was just thinking because they give you very similar readouts. This Bellarc Advisor will give you an HTML page with all the information, if I remember correctly. But the Everest Home Edition is a pretty cool program, too. I think both of them do about the same thing.
Alrighty. Very good. Wow, we've had a rather eclectic evening so far. Alrighty. I have a little bit of an update on Fios installation around here. First of all, a thank you to K2DSL for his rather illustrative email to me. Just a quick note. Originally, they were putting the optical network terminal in your garage or in your basement or even on the side of your house, as long as they could get AC power to it, they didn't care. And then from there, they would run cat wire into your house for whatever, because they originally weren't doing video. Now they are, as David pointed out, tending to run coax from that point, from the optical network terminal to their little residential gateway interface, which breaks out the TV and the telephony and the of course the high speed data. What I have found, I had a little glitch in the process, and it's taken 8 months of intermittent inquiries, and finally somebody was smart enough to realize the problem. Even once I made all the adjustments I could, I have DSL from another carrier on another carrier's line, so in order to get the win back, as Verizon views it, what they are going to do for me is they are going to install video and data next Tuesday in my house. Once that comes up, I have to call the incumbent carrier, inform them that I no longer need my DSL, cancel the DSL. Within a day or so, that will free up the voice line to be picked, or if you will, subject to number portability and put back to Verizon, and they will then establish that service, probably because of the holiday weekend after the weekend, although I could think it surprised me and do it Wednesday or Friday. So that's the process it's going to use. They waive the installation fee, and they waived the new customer fee because of all the grief. And I did not ask them for that. I think that's just splendid. So all my TVs, because I have more TVs going in than what would normally be, those fees have been waived, and so that's very nice. They saved me about 50 or 60, maybe 75 bucks after all said and done. So that's pretty cool. One other thing about the service. Because they're bringing in a piece of fiber optic into the house, that fiber optic is going to come in down the same lead, except it's as everything else, that's telephony right now, except it's not going to be copper. They're going to get rid of the copper after. They'll get rid of it later. But in the meantime, it'll come in to my house, go under the eaves, and into my ham shack on the third floor. Since it's optical, there's no power or anything on that. There's no reason for power. There's no grounding issue except for normal household ground. So they will plug their optical network terminal into an AC outlet right here in my ham shack on the third floor. They will then distribute the video from here. They'll distribute the telephony from here because I have those connections. And everything will be, and of course the data as well. All the hardwired data connections are in this room anyway, plus my son's bedroom next door. And, you know, everything else is going to be wireless for the data side. So that's kind of how we're setting it up. It should be quite an adventure here next Tuesday. So I will have an update on Thanksgiving night. By the way, we will have a net on Thanksgiving night. I do want to make that clear. There will be a net on Thanksgiving to discuss what we're thankful about in amateur radio. That's the subject. How can we be thankful, and what have we gained from amateur radio, and what do we want to give back in order to perpetuate the art and the benefits to the community? So anyway, I kind of mixed those two announcements together, and I think that's about it. If anyone is interested in going to the Barrett Dinner, which is the first Saturday of December, they need to, at this point, contact WB2AIU, although I'm sure one of the other officers, if you have their contact information, will be happy to take care of your information and forward it on to Bob. But it is the first Saturday in December, and I believe it's 7 p.m. at Bellagio's, and I forget where that is, but that's okay. We'll figure it out. And I think it's on their website, so barra.org, B-A-R-A.org. Any other things for the net on these or other subjects, please call K2BAR.
Gordon.
Station is saying Gordon.
That's W2JEK. Yeah, one thing that comes to my mind is that fires that comes into that ONR box puts into your outlet in the wall. What happens when there's a power failure? Does your telephone go out? That's my big beef about the whole thing is that depending on the public service coming down into your house, not that the copper wire from the telephone company's big battery is going to keep your phone running from the central office like the old copper lines are. That's a thought too. There's supposed to be a backup battery in there, but how often will they be changed, and how long will they last when the power goes out?
W2AKR repeater.
First of all, you got me thinking when you said copper line, several times you said that. I was thinking of that wonderful tune that James Taylor plays, Copper Line. I like that song. Anyway, in any case, it does come with a battery backup battery. I believe they anticipate 4 to 8 hours worth of battery backup on your telephony, and I guess also your data. By definition, I don't know what the status of let me amend that. You get 4 to 8 hours of backup on your telephony, and your telephony only. The router they supply is not battery backed up, and as a consequence, you have to provide your own. So there are many ways to provide that yourself. KB2JLL has plugged the whole mess into a secondary UPS with its own battery to extend the life to a couple of days, and that's rather unique. I like that. I'll probably do something similar since I have a battery here for the purpose. I'll probably take the initiative to do that as well. Every 2 years, they can decide to replace it if they feel that its service life has, you know, reached the end. But they do have a means for remotely monitoring it, supposedly, but I don't buy that. I think I haven't seen any evidence of that. So I think the right answer is to simply expect them to come in every 2 years and replace the battery. What they mount on your wall or in your basement or in your garage or whatever it is you want are three things. They mount, well, four things. They mount the optical network terminal, which is the fiber to coax in this case, or fiber to Cat5e interface. Next thing that they do is they have a router, kind of gateway gizmo, which is got, you know, which has your telephone connections, your video output, and your network, your computer network, and also your wireless access point. a wireless router, all built into one box. And the third box they provide you is a, getting paranoid about timing out. The third box they give you is the battery backup unit. And then finally, the subject to however many you have, is there's a set-top box, which may be a DVR, it may not be, it may be high, you know, maybe HD, it may not be, for your each of your televisions. And that's pretty much how that works. So anyway, that's pretty much it. I'm not terribly worried about it. I was more concerned about Cablevision's lack of battery use. That was exactly their initial model, and I don't know whether they've corrected for it. I've heard rumors that they have. They now have put battery backup on their after, on their interface, because people were getting cranky about no telephony. So I think that's pretty much it with that subject. Do you have any more questions, Don?
Comment, UDSL.
Okay, we got two. David first, and then Charlie, and then to Don.
The battery backup unit provides 5 minutes of power for your internet connection, and then it'll cut off your internet connection, and then you'll get somewhere up to what they claim to be 8 hours of voice connection left. And as you mentioned, you can plug in the backup into a UPS, and obviously once the UPS runs out, then you're actually on Verizon's battery backup. There's also an emergency button that can be pushed, and that would actually, even if the battery considers itself run out, you can still make a phone call on it in case of an emergency. And the last thing I wanted to comment on was the battery backup. Battery itself is not Verizon supported, so if it actually fails, it's a customer's responsibility to replace it, but it's a very common battery, and it's less than $20. I would assume if it fails within a very short period of time, they would replace it. They can also monitor when your battery kicks in, and they can determine the ONT is being powered from battery or from electrical power.
I could really screw with their heads with that. Go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah, he already said it, but I was just going to add that the customer's responsibility for the battery. And the first time our power went out here, my uncle promptly had to call everybody and let everybody know that the power is out, and he killed the battery. And he wanted to know if I could bring another battery home. You could swap out batteries, or you could probably use a bigger capacity battery. I think it's a 7.5 amp hour gel cell in there. And that's all I have to add in 3COT.
Just one question before Don goes. How long was your uncle on the phone that he flattened the battery?
He called a lot of people, and I would guess he was on the phone about 4 hours, because he doesn't really have anything better to do.
God bless unlimited calling. Okay. So you have about 4 hours of constant use before he flattened it. Okay, that's good. Charlie, I take it that you are a Fios customer. I'm kind of curious how you like it. Do you have the video service?
Compared to Optimum, I love it. I have the ONT mounted in my basement. I don't have anything on the outside of my house other than a piece of fiber that goes into my basement. So if you want to come over and look at it, and if you have any more questions, just give me a ring. 103GRT.
I'm thinking ice cream and an ONT. Okay, very good. Don, any further?
Nothing at this time, Gordon, about that. No, I was just curious. I still like the old copper line. Because they got the battery in there, they got a generator in there, and they got batteries that'll last mucho hours in the central office. That's one of the things that they've built on the dependability of the phone service in this country, is that they have backup power in the central office. So that's it. Back to that, W2JK.
Well, it's funny you should mention this, but as you know, I work for a major competitor of our incumbent phone company in this territory, and they have adopted a variety of strategies, including fiber to the prem, but the basic philosophy is to do copper to the prem, primarily to reuse that existing infrastructure, and they actually get an amazing amount of performance out of twisted pair. I'm very impressed. There are, you can get five video signals plus internet plus three or four phone connections working pretty well on a twisted pair connection, which is pretty cool. The other thing that that does is it lessens the cost of implementation, even with issues that you can imagine, because it's copper versus optical. It's a huge savings and offers wonderfully splendid service, and there's other things that are coming down the pike that will make it even better. But one thing I can say about, the UVerse service versus Fios is that it costs about a sixth of what Verizon is spending to do it the AT&T way. So much so that the person who actually approved of the architecture and the implementation strategy, if you will, the acquisition process of equipment, the deployment of equipment at Verizon some time ago, year and a half ago, was relieved of his duties because of the economics of what they had, you know, chosen to implement. So it will be a very long time for Verizon to get back its investment. Its ROI curve is horrendous. But, you know, they are where they are. And frankly, AT&T's, well, it reuses a lot of existing infrastructure, lets them, shall we say, coast into the same place without having the brutal ROI curve, return on investment curve. So that's all I can say about that without saying too much. So it's amazing how they just make these business decisions, but they've made them, and they're good technical ones. I can assure you, by the way, there are notches in the UVerse transmission curve for the amateur bands, the HF amateur bands, and that's no mistake either way. And things are generally good, but because of that, and we cannot complain.
Good evening.
A note, any other comments about Fios or broadband internet access?
Quick comment.
Mr. Tim.
Yeah, Don, just so you know, most of, used to be Bell Atlantic. Oh, well, sorry about that. Most of Verizon's backup capability doesn't really come from the batteries. There are a lot of batteries in their COs, but that just provides enough switchover time for the diesel generators to come up. And we have a CO here just down the block from my apartment here in Dumont. We had to do a walkthrough in with the fire department a few years ago before all this Fios took off. And the gentleman there, I mean, they were unbelievable amounts of batteries in this place, hundreds. The gentleman there said that the battery backup could run the system for about, I think, upwards of 20 hours. But normally it was only meant to run for like a half hour or an hour until they could get these two diesel generators up. And these diesel generators would run the entire CO there for up to 2 weeks on the diesel supply that they had, and as part of their contingency plan, they would have diesel delivered daily to keep the system running. So, just as a testament to the backup capability, and it's kind of funny how that responsibility has gone lately from the CO out to the customer. W2VVV.
EK with a comment.
Don.
Yeah, I worked in that office. But the office in Hackensack where I worked most of the time, they had two Hercules V8 diesels, each developed 140 horsepower. Each was something like 300 kilowatts, I think. And they had a means of synchronizing the two so that the one wouldn't be driving the other. In other words, both had been in phase so that they would be generating. And then what they had to do was take the load or shut off all the loads and then load the generators up. And that was, I guess it would take about 10 or 15 minutes to get that up and running. But the batteries would last, like they say, maybe 20 hours. But now they've got a turbine that takes 52 seconds or something like that to from start to turbine speed of 24,000 RPM. That takes about, say, 52 seconds. And then it automatically just switches the load over. I forget how many kilowatts that is. That's 300. Must have been at least a 750 kW turbine. It sounds like a jet engine when it's running, of course. But that's a whole new ball game with that thing.
Okay. That's pretty cool. I just can't imagine daily deliveries of diesel. I'm surprised that they didn't have more capacity than that. Maybe 3 to 5 days, maybe even 7 days to run a CO, but that would just be how I designed. But anyway, let's see, what else do we have in this exciting adventure? Anything else with broadband access or telephony access? Okay, I have one that I was reminded of just yesterday. Kyocera makes a thing called a KR1, and they're about to make a KR2. These are routers, you know, wireless routers that have a PCI card slot. So you can basically, instead of plugging into the internet per se via, let's say, a Cat5 cable, you can instead use your dial, or if you will, your cellular modem as the uplink, so you can establish a portable LAN in another environment and use a cell phone card, essentially, as your internet connection, which is very, very cool. And, of course, since I'm a AT&T formerly Singular-type customer, for a lot of good reasons, some of them are even technical, not just employing them. But anyway, I had discounted the Kyocera KR1 PCI card phone router gizmachi, and instead just kind of put that idea behind me. And then I think it was Daniel yesterday, or one of the other guys, somebody else I was thinking about, mentioned to me that the D-Link makes a similar device. And lo and behold, it's a model 451. I forget what the prefix is, but it's a model 451, and I'm sure if I googled D-Link 451, I can plug in an 860 card, an 875 card. Those are the ones that have been certified. I have an 860 card, actually, from Sierra Wireless. And I'm going to be upgrading it in December to probably a HSUPA card. And that will give me much faster uplink and downlink capability, especially next year when network upgrades kick in even more. So I will be able to provide, like, a portable internet access for various events that we might have. So in the future, if we're contesting, for instance, might be able to do call sign searches and maybe spot ourselves from the hilltop right across the internet from our hilltop sites. The emergency service implications of this are incredible as well, especially if you have a standoff location where you're running an EOC, but you're running an EOC that's, well, not in the crisis zone, but nearby, where you still have good cell phone access. That might be something worth to consider as well. Situations like the flood back in April and such. So I'll report back on that again. I have to say whether I'm going to spend the $150 on the D-Link box, but it's something worth considering. So we will see. Maybe we need to have a conversation about what a kid is, but anyway. Alrighty, on that note, Let's see. Any other comments or questions for the net? Please call K2BAR.
WI2W.
WI2W again, Steve.
Yeah, it would be nice to have internet access at our club meetings. To do, you know, as an impromptu meeting, we could do one of these little video segments on an interesting aspect of amateur radio. That would be fun. And on an even more frivolous activity, we could do a Skype call with video to Andrew in Australia, who currently is 15 hours ahead of us. So that works out for things like conferencing. Anyway, just a couple of comments. It'd be nice to have internet down at the Red Cross building. WI2W, good night all.
Steve, that's a great idea. I'll talk with you offline, but probably mid-spring, late winter, mid-spring, would probably be the window where that would work out the best, although we might be able to do it with what we have. Again, I have to go decide whether I'm going to bother with that. But I've used my laptop for internet access from meetings, so we could do a Skype call from a laptop we have here. Maybe I could set up rig a speakerphone type of arrangement. That would not be a problem. Maybe like a push-to-talk kind of switch that cuts the speaker out and activates the microphone. I could put the speaker through an amplified output. But yeah, that would work fine. Just to just make sure we control the feedback. I think that works splendidly.
Sounds good. Thanks.
So even if I don't upgrade, we could arrange for a KC2KIS call. I'm not a Skype customer, but if you can tell me what I have to load and how to load it, and if you want to enter the magic words that next time we're at a meeting, I can arrange for that. We can test it. I don't get the kit night, unfortunately, because of the Tuesday requirements, but I think that would be splendid. All right, very good. WICW, anybody else? K2BAR. All righty. On that note, I just want to check with Charlie. Charlie, are you up for ice cream, and can I look at your ONT? We'll try that without the feedback.
Yeah, sorry. I already have ice cream.
You've already had ice cream? Oh, well. So, what do I have to do? Bring my own ice cream, or this is not a good night?
You can come over and look at it.
All right, good. After I sign, I'll come over and look at it. Then I'll go get my ice cream, since you've already had ice cream. So be that way. All righty. Well, anybody else have anything for the net before we secure? And KC2KXV, I hope you're in the net, on the net still.
Who am I?
Tony, go.
Gordon, I was hoping you would spend just a couple minutes listening to a 6 meter signal that I want to transmit. Could you possibly go to 50.200 and give me 2 minutes?
I'd be most happy to. I am, let's see, there. I'm there now, no problem. So just let me know what you want to do, and I'll be there for you when you want. K2AMI, this is W2TTT. Just give me, let me secure the net. I want to thank the Bergen County FM Association for the use of the repeater. This has been a fun evening. Not too terribly long a net, but very eclectic net. Lots of interesting topics. By the way, just a note, I did get more orange boxes, which means there'll be more projects in orange boxes soon, and I'll bring those to the club's attention in the future, and I'll post the website for those as well. They're about $32 for the big boxes and less for the smaller ones. They're just wonderful. But anyway, we'll talk more about that next week on Thanksgiving. Remember, everyone, next week, bring your technical questions. And technical, I'd like people to discuss technical topics that for which they're thankful that they approached and got addressed or were able to address for somebody else. What it means to be a ham. And why you're thankful for that. From a technical / social / whatever perspective, I'd be very curious to know that. So if we could spend a little time in this holiday season being reflective on the blessings of being amateur radio operators, the friendship and fellowship we all share, the technical and intellectual stimulation we all obtain, the service we're able to render. I think that's a wonderful assortment of blessings. And some of us even have income that's directly attributable to the fact that we're fans. So, you know, let's talk about that next week. I think it'll be a good topic for Thanksgiving Day. Until next week, I want to thank you all, K2ZO, K2AMI, KCUK, XV, K2DSL, J1W, AB2, XT, WI2W, W4DSA, WE2R, W2JEK, W2Vector, Vector, KF2ID, and, of course, your host, W2TTT Gordon. 73 to all, and have a great evening. The repeater's now going back to normal amateur radio use. This is K2BAR securing.
This is W2JEK with a comment that the Throw On Radio Club, a week from this Friday, will be having their auction Friday night after Thanksgiving. That's it, W2JEK.
At what time do the doors open? And I apologize for not mentioning it.
I'm not sure what time the doors open, Gordon. Let's just know the people know to get go there. And I think it actually starts at 7, the auctioning, but I think it, I'm not sure the times exactly.
Okay, let's keep an eye out on this. I'm going to hopefully Fairlawn will put it up on their website. Maybe Barrett can put it up on theirs as well. And Tony, maybe we'll send you a note to get that information out to the Barrett members as well as the Fairlawn members. That's a great event. It's a lot of fun. It's always this Friday after Thanksgiving. And bring your shekels and have a good time. After all, it is Fairlawn, so you bring shekels. Anyway, never mind. Anyway, it's a wonderful thing, and I love that event. It's fun. I think the doors open at 6. And by the way, just one other point. It's at the Senior Citizens Building, not at the Community Center. It's at the Senior Citizens Building off of Fairlawn Avenue. So keep that in mind as well. It's to the north of Fairlawn Avenue, I think one or two blocks off of Fairlawn Avenue going away from 208 toward the borough complex, if I remember right. Anyway, thank you, Don, for mentioning that. That's a good point. W2JEK and W4DSA, thank you again for your net roster from last week. I blew mine up. 73W2TTT.